It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Hey, bud. Hey, right now, we need your truck. We just need to get people over to the hospital, okay?
Okay, go ahead. Put them all in the back.
Okay. Can you pull over towards the side over there? You know what? This person right here. Hold up. Can we get this person in here?
Oh, my God. Maybe this is horrible.
Yeah, hold on. Try it now.
Oh my God. Sandy Rios with you. If you're just waking up, and some of you are just waking up, you are hearing that there was a terrible shooting after most of us went to bed last night. A mass murder in Las Vegas took place. The shooter operating out of the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay Resort. It was a concert. It's a festival, a music festival. It's been going on for several days. It's called the Route 91 Harvest County Music Festival, and Jason Aldean was performing. I think it was the last performance, and as he was singing, you can start to hear gunshots, and it was an automatic weapon, so that it was just an enormous number of rounds. We know now that at least 50 are dead, 200 injured. That's just the preliminary count. I'm not sure that that's final. And we know that several police officers, at least two I read, are dead. Many of them were in the audience because they were there with their family and friends enjoying. Some had driven out from Los Angeles. And so there were a lot of first responders who were there to enjoy the concert with their families. Firemen, too, who either pitched in and helped or were victims themselves. And, of course, we're just beginning to hear the stories. This happened, at 10 o'clock. I think that would be Las Vegas time last night. We know that the shooter was a guy named Stephen Paddock. We know that he's in his 60s. Other than that, I don't think we know anything about him. I think he is dead. They apprehended him in his room. They also then went on a search for his girlfriend, Marilu Danley, who is an Asian woman from Australia. And honestly, that's just about, as far as I know, of course, things are breaking constantly, and there'll be more stories as we are on the air. That's the basis of what we know. Fox and Friends did a pretty good report. Let's listen.
The details are as follows. This was a three-day music festival in Las Vegas, happening right across the street from the Mandalay Bay Hotel and Casino, a major property there in Las Vegas. And a gunman apparently has opened fire from the 32nd floor, a gunman who has now been killed. We do not have his name. We do not know his motive at this point. But we know that he had a high-powered automatic weapon, and from the 32nd floor, from that perch, shooting down into a concert that had at least 20,000 people attending, just opened fire for a number of minutes into this crowd at about 10:30 last night, Las Vegas time. So that's about 1:30 in the morning on the East Coast, so maybe 4 hours ago. And this suspect opened fire, killing more than 20 people at this point. That is the number we have, but that is still preliminary. Injuring more than 100, and chaos would ensue after that. People pulling injured people out of there, trying to get them somewhere where they could try and save some lives, and nobody had any idea where this was coming from. They just knew that bullets were being fired. They could hear it right at the very end of this country music concert.
Yeah, so the bullets fired from the 32nd floor there of the Mandalay Bay, some distance away from the concert itself, the Route 91 Harvest
this music festival. Jason Aldean, the last performer on the stage at the time when the gunshots rang out, happened for about 20 to 30 minutes. Some of the witnesses said, you can listen to the video happening right there, the gunshots, just one after another. We're told that there would be a pause, presumably the shooter reloading, and then more gunshots following. At least two off-duty officers killed there at the scene.
That was Fox's preliminary report. Of course, they're, you know, they're learning about it as we are, so the reports are not clean and neat because we don't know all the details. CNN did an interview with a witness that I thought you should hear. Here it is.
Jason Aldean was in the midst of performing. What did you initially hear, and what was the reaction to that huge crowd?
Well, we were watching the concert from the east side of the stage, and we heard a succession of pops. And it did, I mean, unbelievably, it sounded like fireworks. But as they kept rattling off, then we realized something was up, and most of the crowd started to duck down a bit. And Jason Aldean actually turned around and ran off the stage. And that's when we realized that, you know, we were in, you know, something bad was going on. So actually, everybody in the crowd actually got down, which was unbelievable just to watch that. And everybody was staying safe and low. And the succession of firearms going off just kept going over and over in like groups of 10. I'd say at least we heard 50 or 60 minimum when we were all down. And then people started stampeding. We're going to start stampeding to go towards the main exit or the main entrance, which was with this way. And we all stayed low and we went out the east. And we went that way and people were climbing the fences, pushing their way through. The barricades were coming down. People were screaming, crying. Everybody was just trying to get out.
Did you hear the gunshots pause and then start up again?
Oh, yeah, like they were loading clips.
Well, a Canadian brother from the north, I'm thinking, but that was the report from CNN of an eyewitness. One eyewitness report interviewed by Fox was a young guy who didn't have any shirt on because he had taken his shirt to tend to people that were wounded and had stayed in the stadium, you know, trying to help people. It was just a young guy. So there, you know, we're going to hear stories about heroism. I'm telling you, this is not a day and age for the faint of heart. And I guess the main message that I think we must communicate is that we must all be ready spiritually. Ready, I'm going to go to that because we don't know what the future holds. These attacks are happening all over. There were 49 killed, by the way, at the Pulse nightclub. So the numbers here are even larger. We don't know because there's trouble everywhere. There's trouble outside. There's trouble inside. We have enemies on the outside. We have enemies on the inside. You heard the report at the top of the hour about that West Point cadet who's a communist who has tweeted some treacherous things about General Mattis, about Vice President Pence. He's an outright communist, and yet he's at West Point Academy. Somehow the guard has gone down. The gates have been opened, and we have threats from the inside. We don't know who this guy is. Stephen Paddock was a local out there, as best I understand. Who is he? What is he doing? What's the source of his anger? Who was he trying to kill? We know it was a music festival, so what does that mean about him? I don't know, and I'm not going to speculate. I'm sure we'll find out more as the day unwinds, but we must all be ready, really. And we need to have a sense of urgency about the day in which we're living because there are disasters everywhere, whether it's Puerto Rico, which is a whole other story of the destruction down there and the wickedness of the games that people are playing politically, the wickedness that we see, the great gestures we see of people, and then also the wickedness of people involved in perpetrating this stuff. So these are dangerous days, and we need to be prepared, which means we need to know who God is, that he sent his only son so that we would not have to worry. And not because it doesn't really, death is not what we fear. It's those, you know, that can kill the soul that we fear. And look, as long as all is well with your soul, you don't have to worry. I mean, it's not going to be pleasant. You know, dying is kind of a pathway we all have to take, whether it's cancer or whatever. We're not, you know, we don't love death. Unlike the Muslims who love death death more than we love life, that's what they tell us, the Muslim Brotherhood, that's their motto. We love life. We embrace death because we know that we trust God, and as soon as we breathe our last breath, we will be with him, and all of this will be behind us. And that's the good news that we want to share to everyone, and we should do that. Even today, as you're going about your business, it would probably be a good thing to be very clear about who God is. Offer people hope. Tell them, maybe for the first time in their life, be bold and kind and loving, and offer some sort of a comfort in the sense that we can understand these things in a better way if we know who God is. By the way, while this is happening, of course, yesterday, the NFL games over the weekend, all kinds of things are happening, good and bad. We have players. Oh, I could do a rundown. It's actually pretty lengthy of what the teams did over the weekend. The members of the San Francisco 49ers knelt during the national anthem Sunday before the Arizona Cardinals, who stood. I think the Arizona Cardinals beat them handily, by the way. And that's, of course, where Colin Kaepernick's, where this all started. Mr. Pig, you know, cops are pigs wearing socks. You know, the problem with this protest is that it emanates from a hatred of law enforcement. That's what Colin Kaepernick was expressing. And anything other than that is really, you know, do you really want to be associated with that? Any of you players? Honestly, is there not a way to protest or do something if you are black for your community to help rather than take a stand on the side of someone who thinks cops are pigs, really? Is that where you want to go? Is there something, could we talk about maybe making sure there's no racism? Look, a lot of cops are black. We do know that, right? And many of them have been in the crosshairs of the left, of Black Lives Matter and others. You know, they have paid a dear price, too. A lot of the police in St. Louis are black, and they've paid a heavy price there. But yet still, you know, it's police in general that are abusing a black Americans. I don't believe that's true. I believe there may be some. I bet there's a lot of different colors involved in this. And I bet that there's probably little of it happening right now based on what happened at Ferguson and the height of awareness among police, the way they have to bend over backwards when they are absolutely abused in public. I doubt there's very little racial, at least acting out on racial bias right now. I doubt it. And yet these ball players are suddenly, you know, impassioned by, you know, thinking they're great, brave, because they bow before the national anthem. And so they've gotten a lot of different responses. You know, it didn't go so well in Green Bay, Wisconsin. I think Aaron Rodgers maybe has lost his mojo, certainly with the crowd, because he sent out a plea for them to lock arms and show unity with the team. And some kind of mumbo-jumbo as unity and love and growing together as a society and starting a conversation around something that may be a little bit uncomfortable for people. You know what? I don't know if Aaron Rodgers has been on another planet, but many of us, I believe, have been working on race relations for decades. It's not uncomfortable. It's not the first time we've thought about it. It may be the first time he's thought about it, but it's not the first time many of us have thought about it. We have black friends that we consider family. This is not new. And so the players in Green Bay, the people in Green Bay didn't do what Aaron Rodgers asked them. And he's been very popular. He's their quarterback, as you know. They didn't do it. In fact, they chanted USA and stood and held their hands over their hearts during a flag. I think there was one row that did what Aaron Rodgers asked. And that's a pretty good slam, really, I think. And so, by the way, the NFL favorability has been cut nearly in half after the anthem protests. So it's having an effect. One bar in Massachusetts decided to turn on golf and NASCAR and brought in a piano player to perform a selection of show tunes of patriotic music. He offered wings and, I don't know, pizza and all of this. And he said on a normal Sunday, he averages about 20 to 25 people. But that afternoon, when the Patriots were playing, nearly 100 people showed up. So that's the kind of response, and that's, you know, here, look at what's happening in Las Vegas. The country's being divided. We're being divided. We are in danger. There are assaults from within and without, and we don't need this kind of nonsense on the football field. We need these men to stand for America, protect their homes, black and white and brown, and stand as Americans to help unite, not to divide, which is, I believe, what they're doing. There's a lot more to say. Coming up next, one of my favorite congressmen, Congressman Dave Brett, is going to be joining us because last week Steve Scalise made his entrance back into the House of Representatives. I hope you heard about it, but you might not have because there wasn't much said, not only about the attempted slaughter on the field in Alexandria, Virginia, of conservative congressmen, but also about his return. We're going to talk about that and the response of some of the things that Congressman Brett said in regard to that. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
So what would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, now available in Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, has it finally happened? Can computers outthink humans?
No, they can't, Chris. Now, they can outperform humans on some difficult tasks, but they're not really thinking. For instance, calculators can do mathematical manipulations much more quickly and accurately than humans. But keep in mind, they were designed by humans and programmed to do these various tasks. They're not thinking, they're just doing the things they were designed to do. No, Chris, machines can't actually think, nor do they exercise real judgment. This is reserved for mankind, created in the image of God, just like it says back in Genesis.
Thanks, Dr. Morris.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Visit our web store at icr.org/store and use the promo code FACT at the checkout when ordering your That's a Fact DVD.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TMU. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TMU. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Just in case you wonder how much liberals loathe President Trump, consider what happened at Cambridgeport Elementary School in Massachusetts. First Lady Melania Trump sent the school library a collection of Dr. Seuss books, but librarian Liz Phipps Sorio rejected the books. She wrote a nasty public letter to the First Lady, complaining about the Trump administration's education policies. Ms. Sorio then dropped the mother of all charges. She said Dr. Seuss books are steeped in racist propaganda, caricatures, and harmful stereotypes. Horton is a what? The lefty librarian went on to say Dr. Seuss is a tired and worn ambassador of children's literature. The Cambridge school system said Ms. Sorio was not authorized to accept or reject donated books, nor is she allowed to use public resources for political purposes. And you thought the mean one was Mr. Grinch. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I'm here to give you an update on the situation as I know it at this point. One of the things I wanted to update you with is we have located the vehicles that I had put out in the first briefing, and we believe we're confident, but not 100% sure we have located the female person of interest. So I want the people to feel confident and calm in that aspect that we've accomplished a lot in a short period of time. Now, the number of injuries, I do not know yet, but we are looking in an excess of 50 individuals dead and over 200 individuals injured at this point. I do not want to give you an accurate number and it be wrong, so subsequently, that is why I'm portraying it in that manner. Now, the suspect, I am going to provide you his identity at this point. His name is Stephen Paddock. with the date of birth of 4-9 of 1953. As far as his history and background, we haven't completed that part of the investigation yet, but we located numerous firearms within the room that he occupied. And that's, like I stated earlier, it's going to be a long and tedious investigation. Now, furthermore, I want to provide you the phone number that I said I would provide in the first briefing. That number for family and friends to get an update on loved ones is 1-866-535-5654. One more time, 1-866-535-5654.
All right, that's Sheriff Joseph Lombardo of Las Vegas. You can imagine how traumatic it is. 50 people dead, 200 people wounded. And, you know, so they're just scrambling. They're trying to figure out who this shooter was, what his motivation was. We don't know much about him right now. They have apprehended his girlfriend or his live-in, whatever, female. Just stay tuned. We'll be bringing more of that. You know, it's hard to imagine, really, that it was just June. It was just June of this year that another terrible shooting took place in Alexandria, Virginia. My husband and I were just driving through Alexandria just a couple of days ago, and that was our church was located in Alexandria, still is. It's just a sleepy little place just south of the Pentagon. It's very close, and so the shooter goes in, and he shoots three congressmen. Steve Scalise almost dies. And yet it got so little press. And that to me is stunning. But he returned, Steve Scalise returned after fighting, you know, really struggling and having so many surgeries. He returned to Congress just last week. And I want you to hear what it sounded like when he returned. Here it is.
What a dramatic and moving moment on Capitol Hill this morning as Congressman Steve Scalise of Louisiana walked onto the floor of the House for the first time since he was seriously wounded in a shooting almost 4 months ago. Speaker Ryan announced his return.
The chair wishes to mark the return to the chamber of our dear friend and colleague from Louisiana, Mr. Steve Scalise.
That was one of many standing ovations. Congressman Scalise was shot on June 14th at the congressional baseball game practice. Doctors said he might not survive. The gunman who opened fire on the lawmakers was killed in an exchange of gunfire with Capitol Police officers. The congressman plans to be working out of his office even as he continues outpatient rehab. Scalise addressed the House, thanking the Capitol Police officers.
Even after being shot, both themselves continued to engage the shooter and ultimately got him down, which not only saved my life, but saved the life of a lot of other people that are here in this chamber today. Crystal couldn't be with us today, but David Bailey is with us. David, you are my hero. You saved my life. Thank you so much.
And President Trump, just moments ago outside the executive office building, said how pleased he was the congressman has returned.
He's a special man, brave, just a great guy, a great friend of mine. We're so excited. What happened to him, just horrible. We are so happy.
All right, so that was a report by MSNBC. Actually, a pretty good report, I thought, of Steve Scalise returning to the chamber. Congressman Dave Brat was, of course, in that chamber, and he actually appeared on that same MSNBC show as soon as that report was given. And so I asked him to join us this morning to talk about, first of all, what it was like to be in that chamber. Congressman Brat, so much happening this morning. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Sandy. And it's always great to be on your show. You always get down to the nuts and bolts of things and usually the spiritual side. And so today, that's what that room was all about. It was just suspense as Steve was getting to walk in. First, the staff came in and some of the Secret Service. We were all just waiting, and there comes in Steve with a big old smile on the crutches and just, you know, kind of hobbling in, you know, weakened state. But, boy, when he got to the microphone, there was nothing weak. He said, I open this as I open everything with God. And he went off on just a religious experience. And the whole thing for 10, 15 minutes was just entirely God-centered. And then he said as soon as he went down, you know, the Secret Service guys came and he heard another round, you know, another type of bullet coming out of the clip, so he knew he was going to get covered, crawling along the sand of the baseball field on his gut, and he felt God's presence, and he prayed for some specific things, he said, and God answered everything he prayed for. And so that it was just amazing. And then the Democrat folks got together in their bullpen and prayed for Steve. The Republicans got together, prayed for Steve. And that right there shows you what truly unites this country, when it all gets down to it, right? God is still the first principle. When you're ready to die, when anyone's ready, you see what matters most in your life, right? And it's usually God and family. All the other stuff, right, is secondary. And so it was just a great day, and I went off on MSNBC News and talked about where true unity lies, and we need that more than ever in the country right now. I wrote a book, some of your folks have probably read it, American Underdog. I said that Western Civ roughly almost ended when it came up to Martin Luther King, because he was the last guy who unified us. He was a PhD in Protestant theology, and he combined social justice with the biblical narrative, with theology, with preaching, et cetera. And we don't have any world-class figures like that anymore who are uniting us along theology and religion and philosophy and ethics. Right now it's just politics 24/7 in hit pieces, and we have to transcend that. Like you do every day on your radio show. And so, Steve, it was a great reminder. It'll get back to normal. We'll get back to, you know, politics. But hopefully we all remember God when it's tragedy time. But then we forget God when it's business time. So we got to change our tune a little up there in the swamp.
Well, I know that tensions have been, it's been difficult on so many issues. It's been a slugfest. And I pray for you guys all the time, because I don't know that people understand what pressure you're under. Who wants to do that? So much easier to just quit, really. And some are quitting, as a matter of fact. But you guys, and so then there's so much animosity, so many lies. There's so much hatred and hatefulness and accusations. I think about all those ethics investigations into people that are innocent. The ethics rules in the House are just out of control. The lack of rules, I guess I would say. And so, with that being the case, Congressman, when you looked around the room on that day, when Steve is talking about God and his experience, and you know, and we did talk about the fact that Democrats bowed and prayed for him the night of the game, which was just wonderful. At least some of them did, mostly a lot of black Democrats. Was there a sense of unity? Did you look at okay, this is real personal, people that you generally just are angry with because they're opponents to you? Did you sense a melting in any way of those relationships?
Yeah, and there always is. I mean, that's what's interesting about D.C. is we don't really battle, with our colleagues head-to-head. The nasty battle happens when the mainstream media and CNN, I watched the Sunday shows yesterday. I mean, it's just horrendous the way they treat everybody. And then the bloggers are even worse. I mean, it's just spewing stuff. And so we don't ever use foul language with each other. We don't do personal put-downs up there in the chamber with our colleagues. That, for the most part, is very positive. We all work out in the weight room every morning together, 100 of us. It's positive. And religion comes through even in those private conversations. But that's where the breakdown occurs. It's kind of like, you know, going to church on Sunday, and the religious experience only lasts on Sunday. And then the rest of the week, you're back to business. Whereas in our tradition, God is sovereign over the whole week. Yeah. And we need to get back to that, right? Our behavior has to bounce up through God and the commandments and the ethics and the love. And everything we do should reflect that, including our policy positions. And so, yeah, I always try to give the benefit of the doubt to the other side while I'm questioning. But like on this tax thing, for example, it's just continuous back-and-forth hit pieces. There's no context for anything. We're going to have economic growth. People don't even remember what it looks like. For 30 years, wages have been flat. And the left is just as upset about that as the right. The Bernie Sanders vote, in many ways, is like the Trump vote. It's the middle class that has been left behind. And so we all have to reflect on how can we uplift this country, you know, physically, spiritually, economically, with jobs for their kids. And so that's what we're really trying to do. And then when you just get constantly pounded by the other side, and then at the same time they say they're compassionate and have feelings, I mean, that's kind of a joke when they pound you over the head and then say, you know, why don't you have feelings like us? It's like, no, I think my feelings are okay, right? I have compassion for everybody, and it's embedded in actions that are actually going to help people over the long run. So it is a tough job, and people like you that help support us is just tremendous, because we do need it.
You know, I need to get particulars. I made a lot of assumptions when I introduced you, but Congressman Bratt represents the 7th District in Virginia. He was made famous by his surprise defeat of Majority Whip, I think it was Majority Whip at the time, Eric Cantor. It was a shock upset. Congressman Bratt is both an economics professor and he has a degree in theology, I believe, from Princeton. And so that's why he is equipped to say the things he's saying. And Rosie O'Donnell, for one, was very critical of what you said on MSNBC, because you talked about God openly, Dave, which is, I know, is awkward in a setting like that. I've done it many times myself not awkward, I'm used to it, but it's difficult. It's like navigating something difficult, because you have to say it in a way that an audience with so many different viewpoints can understand, and that's not easy. So Rosie O'Donnell weighs in when you started talking about the God in the chamber and Steve Scalise's speech and the effect of God, and she says, okay, so MSNBC, why is the GOP Congressman Dave Brett talking about religion and God? Why? Did you respond to her, and if so, what did you say, or what would you have said?
Yeah, no, I did. I did respond, and I mean, in this case, it's like you said, it's hard to navigate, you know, talking about God and his first principles in one-minute sound bites. But with Steve, it was very easy, and it was just heartfelt. And I just said what happened in the chamber, and it involved God over and over and over. His whole testimony was about God. And so I went through it. So Rosie tweets out, what in the world does this congressman keep talking about God? He keeps talking about God. So in a way, I think it hit her, right? And that's the way God operates, right? God hits people in certain ways. So she tweeted that out, and then I tweeted out just an article I wrote, right? I never hit back, and I don't respond, you know, in petty ways. I just shot out a piece. You may want to read this piece that I wrote about God and public policy in the Washington Examiner about a month ago. And I tried to lay out some of the reasons. And this did not used to be awkward, right? I mean,
yeah,
from
exactly.
George Washington on through, Ben Franklin, all of them, even the deist types, right? They say we go to God for everything except the most important things in our life, right? When they were battling at Valley Forge and for the wisdom to set our country up in the right way with a constitution that would make sense. And the whole crew went to God in prayer, in public. And today, we've been beaten down to the point where we think we shouldn't go there. But the First Amendment makes it clear, right? We shouldn't establish a religion, and that's God's principle. You don't force religion on anybody. But on the other hand, there's a comma, and it says, but absolutely free expression for everybody.
Yep.
And that includes us.
Congressman,
and I think that's why a lot of Americans are frustrated right now. They don't feel like they have the right to free expression of the most holy and most true and most important first principles ever.
Congressman, I don't know what your time constraints are. Can you stay with me 5 minutes more? Because
I
want to talk. Okay, so we're going to hold this break for an extra 5 minutes, you guys, back in Tupelo, and we'll hold the break. Let's hold the break for 5 minutes, guys, and we'll put Congressman Bratt's article, "God and Politics, Public Policy," on our Facebook page so that you can read it and share it. But of course, Congressman, to get now practical, the nuts and bolts, as I said, you're an economics professor, and I've actually been really wanting to talk to you about this tax plan. I know the Freedom Caucus is supporting it, but I want to know what you think about this tax proposal.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on the budget committee, and so we were waiting to see the basic bullet points of the tax plan before we signed off on the budget. And so there was a little tension over that, right? But the Freedom Caucus always wants to make sure we come through on our promises. Like Obamacare, we did a phase plan, right? We did not deliver a repeal like we promised. So on taxes, we wanted to make sure we got it right. And for the most part, we got what was promised by the Trump tax plan, the Paul Ryan Better Way plan. This thing reduces rates for everybody. And the business component is huge. I wanted to make sure the S-Corp, the small pass-through businesses back in Virginia, that's most all of my district, my constituents, I wanted to make sure not just the big C corporations, right, the big powerful guys with the lobbyists and the cronies, they're getting a break, right? They're getting the corporate rates coming down from the highest in the world down to 20. But the S-Corp rate is also coming down from 39 to 25. And so that's a huge tax rate reduction. And then we got money coming back from overseas. We're going to make our firms more competitive to compete with the rest of the world. Right? Ireland's got a corporate tax rate of 13%. That's why all our firms are going over there and setting up shell corporations. We want that money coming back here and the jobs coming back here. And so all that's fine and dandy, but the news media is just focusing in on these tax brackets, which haven't even been announced yet, and the tax rate. And what they're forgetting is the most important part, and that's the dynamic part, the economic growth. Wages have been flat for 30 years, roughly speaking. 30 years. So no one even knows what economic growth looks like back home, right? In the Midwest, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, all those states Trump won. That's why they voted for Trump. And he's going to stay true, keep his promise, and get them some economic growth so their incomes go up, the paychecks go up, the retirement accounts go up. That's the American dream, and it's been missing. And so that in a nutshell, that's the basic good news. And so, you know, there's going to be a few little points where people will debate who gets what. But overall, the status quo is not working. The current tax plan is utterly complex. The average person, I have a PhD in economics, and I dread having to go fill that thing out. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be better, simpler, and get the economy grown, and so it's good news.
But you know that if that's true, and if it should pass, and if the economy should improve, that would be terrible for the left. They don't want that. So, So my question, you know, I'm sure the House could probably pass this, but how about the Senate? And the Republicans in there, the liberal, I was not moderate, the liberal Republicans in the Senate. Do you think it can pass in the Senate?
I think there's going to be so much overwhelming pressure, right? So Obamacare was a very tough vote for some of those senators from the liberal states. This will be somewhat tough, but not like health care. And so the weight of the world, right, they're basically... If two or three of those folks vote no, they will ruin the Republican Party single-handedly, and they know that. And so if they want any future office doing anything, not to mention not going down in the history books as a loser, I got to think we get the votes in the Senate. And so I'm remaining optimistic on that one in spite of our total failure on health care.
One thing, just an obvious that you know, but people forget, congressmen have to run for office every 2 years, and that's one of the downsides of serving in the House, and it's really like a chain around their necks, really, because they're always having to run for office, and Congressman Brad has been in the eye of the, you know, the target for a long time, certainly from Republicans, because he defeated Eric Cantor, the establishment. Went through a real struggle, and every year I think there is a move by the left and by establishment Republicans to get you out of office. So what's happening with your re-election this year, Dave, or in 2018?
Yeah, and that is the trick. I don't have the money, and so if anybody out there's got a rich uncle, go to DaveBratt.com and hit the button. And so I'll have competition from both sides. I already have 6 Democrats announced. And my district went from being, you know, plus 12 to plus 6. So I'm going to have to work hard and hustle. I think I'm representing my constituents well. I get around to almost 10 counties all the time. And so I'm staying in touch good. But it's like you say, it's a hard. I'm up there 3 weeks. And then I only have 1 week when I'm home to go around all the 10 counties. And so that's what a day in the people think this is like a cush job. And boy, it's It's one tonight every day.
You know, it can be a cush job if you don't
deserve.
If you don't care, it can be a cush job. Or if you find your niche and you're get the sugar daddy to take care of you. But if you're really a patriotic American and you're trying to do what's right, it is a tough slog. DaveBratt.com for all of his information. We'll post his article on our Facebook page. Congressman David Bratt, it's a pleasure. Thanks for joining me.
For I am not ashamed of the gospel. For it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. In the case that is to religious liberty, what Roe versus Wade was to abortion, the Department of Justice has weighed in on the side of religious freedom, and Jack Phillips in the Masterpiece Cake Shop case pending before the Supreme Court. The DOJ argued in an amicus brief that the state of Colorado's attempt to force Jack Phillips to celebrate a homosexual wedding against his beliefs by baking a cake is unconstitutional.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Many in America seem to have forgotten that its foundation was built on God. In this 40th year celebration of the American Family Association, we invite you to help us remind America once again of the truth behind our national motto, In God We Trust. You can do your part and display your faith with an In God We Trust car decal from the AFA store. Order yours today with free shipping at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
People today, both Christians and non-Christians alike, are fascinated by the idea of angels. But while there are plenty of myths and misconceptions about what angels do, very few people know the truth. This week on Pathway to Victory, Dr. Robert Jeffress sheds light on what the Bible really says about these mysterious beings. Join us for a special mini-series all this week on Pathway to Victory.
Pathway to Victory is heard Sunday mornings at 3:30 Central on American Family Radio.
Hi, this is Ron Ball, and this is your Choose Greatness Minute. I recently had a meeting with the head of one of the largest Christian organizations in the United States. I wanted to know what made this group tick. I wanted to know why they were so effective. I spent an hour with this president and asked him for his secrets. He spent the whole time edifying other people, telling me about his staff, his team, other pastors with whom they worked. He spent his time edifying others and never mentioned himself. He went out of his way to focus my attention on what other people were doing. Here was a man who had learned the lesson of never being full of himself. John 13:35 says, "This is how all men will know you're my disciples, if you have love one for another." The words of Jesus. This man spread the love. He didn't hog it for himself. He was a great man. Learn more at choosegreatness.com. Choosegreatness.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. A massacre at the Mandalay Casino in Las Vegas last night has resulted in the murder of at least 50 concertgoers and the wounding of over 100 more, picked off by a shooter on the 32nd floor of an adjacent hotel. Authorities have identified the shooter as a local man, Stephen Paddock, but not revealed his apparent motivations. What is clear, however, is that the United States, like too many other nations, remains vulnerable to acts of mass violence against innocents. They may be perpetrated by individuals seeking nothing more than the instant celebrity that comes from such a notorious act. Others, however, seek to inflict this sort of terrifying mayhem for a cause, especially for the purpose of achieving political outcomes. Given the difficulty of preventing individual attacks, we must be vigilant about all those incubating adherence to such causes as well. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. In case you just woke up or just tuned in, there's been a terrible shooting in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's the Route 91 Harvest County Musical Festival. A shooter from the 32nd floor Mandalay Bay Resort has killed 50 and injured at least 200. Maybe killed more, we don't know. That's one more person dead, at least the count at this point, than was murdered at Pulse nightclub. It's a country music festival, so it's country music, so you can imagine who the crowd is, and then you wonder, well, who would want to shoot those people? I don't know, but his name is Stephen Paddock. They found him in the room. I believe that he is dead. I believe they've apprehended his girlfriend, Marilou Danley, who is Australian. She's Asian by descent. He is in his 60s. But at this point, I don't know anything more about him. We are learning now that they found with him 8 guns, 2 platforms, and a camera to see first responders. So I'm jumping to the conclusion that he was absolutely targeting some of the police that were shot. When I went on the air earlier, all I knew at that point was at least 2 policemen had been killed. I don't know. I think others were wounded, but I don't know. You know, who knows? We'll have to hear as this thing unfolds. But cameras to find first responders? I mean, this is just amazing. There's also a story being told that a woman 45 minutes before the shooting began was telling concert goers that they're going to die. So who knows if that's true or not? These are the things that are said when you have an emergency or a tragedy like this. You hear all kinds of things. So we'll have to let it all shake out. You know, there was another violent event that happened just last week, and I personally didn't hear anything about this. Maybe you did, but it happened in Indiana. It was when President Trump was in Indiana. He was on his way back to Air Force One when one of the Metropolitan Police officers named Robert Turner crashed his motorcycle on I-70. There's actually a picture of him lying on the side of the road. The report I'm reading says that people stopped to take pictures of him rather than helping the officer. He had several cuts. He was lying next to his motorcycle on the ground. He was rushed to the hospital, put in a neck brace, and then he received a call from President Trump. The people that were near the president reporting that the president refused to take off until he had a chance to speak to this officer. And so there was an audio of the conversation. Look, it's not nothing earth shaking here, but I want you to hear this. The officer is lying on a stretcher with a neck brace. And by the way, he's a black trooper. I don't think president knew that. I don't think it matters to him. But we have to say these things because we have to talk of each other in terms of color. Now, you see, we're constrained to do that. And so, the president, this makes me weep, honestly. You can hear is the officer's voice. You can't hear the president, but here it is.
Understand. Yes, sir. Okay. Believe so. I'm not sure. I haven't had the x-ray on it yet. I appreciate it, sir. All right, sir. Okay. All right, thank you, sir. All right, bye. Thanks.
Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department posted on Facebook that Trump refused to take off until he spoke with the wounded officer, thanking him for his service. And that was the wounded officer speaking. And again, his name is Robert Turner. He was a Metropolitan Police officer out of Indianapolis. So just wanted to share that with you because heaven knows we need some encouragement this morning. And by the way, I'm reading, let's just say our friend J. Christian Adams wrote this article, and it says it's titled "Trump Court Nominee Upheld Rights of Police Against Holder DOJ Misconduct." Another great judicial pick by Trump. And he goes on to describe a judge named Kurt Engelhardt for the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. He was the judge who wrote a scathing 129-page order blistering the misconduct of lawyers at the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division in the local New Orleans U.S. Attorney's Office in the prosecution of New Orleans police officers. You may recall, I talked to Christian about that. Christian's a former attorney with Justice. He was a whistleblower. And he just could not believe how they were railroading New Orleans police. And the Justice Department was doing actually using other names and contacting newspaper to feed negative stories It was just, it's an amazing story. So that judge was, gave the scathing report of what the Justice Department was doing in New Orleans. And then another title here on judicial nominees, Trump just keeps on winning. That's out of the Washington Examiner. And it talks about a couple of others, which I don't have time to give their names right now because I want to, but I just want you to know there are some good, great nominees. People say of all the things that the president is accomplishing, this seems to be the category, the lane where the most is being accomplished. Dana Rohrabacher, Congressman from California, changing the subject, is has gone to see Julian Assange, who is, where is he? He's in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. And Dana, Congressman Rohrabacher, is saying that Julian Assange can say exactly where he got the email that went into WikiLeaks before the election, the ones that they continually blame. They say that Trump colluded with the Russians for these emails, which is really, I think, ridiculous. But, you know, who am I? Julian Assange has claimed for a long time. I remember him saying that he thought it was this. He hinted that it was this young man that was killed on the streets of Washington, the DNC staffer that got those emails to him. So Dana is trying to get the president to extradite Julian Assange so that he can hear directly from him. But he says he's having trouble getting the message through to the president because his staff will not let him communicate with him or tell him about this. So does that sound familiar? I mean, because we know that that's kind of the standard practice right now, no reason to doubt Congressman Rohrabacher's word on that. We'll let you know if we hear more about that. By the way, Bob Mueller, the investigator, former FBI director, is blocking congressional oversight of the FBI involvement in Trump's surveillance. Because guess why? Because, let's see. The Congress, the DOJ and FBI are refusing to hand over documents related to the Steele dossier. Remember the fake dossier I've told you about ad nauseum? And the FBI, via James Comey, involvement in assembling the content therein. They will not say anything about it. They are refusing, it even to Congress, to reveal any information. And they claim that Special Counsel Robert Mueller is investigating it. Yeah, his good friend James Comey and the FBI and their handling of this. I'm sure that former FBI Director Bob Mueller, who's been in the process of trying to put together a prosecution of Donald Trump for heaven knows what, is the objective source to be reviewing the FBI and their behavior on the dossier, and also his good buddy James Comey. This is the most corrupt situation I can't even imagine. This is so dangerous, and yet this is what we see happening. This story this morning is just further disturbing. Washington Times reporting that Andrew Weissman, who led the Justice's fraud division, working with mob figures, and now he's reunited with his former boss, Bob Mueller, and they're putting the pressure on Paul Manafort. They claim this openly. Of course, they invaded his home. They picked the lock, broke the door open, searched his wife, who was in bed with him, for guns. They're trying to intimidate Paul Manafort. Weissman contributed money to Barack Obama's 2008 presidential run, as well as the Democratic Party, and to New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. Of course, we've told you that the staff that Mueller has hired are, for the most part, supporters, strong supporters of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And so they are trying, they are saying in this article that there's, Manafort says there's no connection. He has nothing to say. They're trying to get him to be a witness against Donald Trump. They're putting as much pressure on him as they possibly can. And yet he says his tax returns are clean. His business is clean. He has nothing to hide. And yet they're putting the squeeze on him. They plan, allegedly, according to this, to indict him by Thanksgiving, to try to make life miserable for him so that somehow he will bring forth dirt on Donald Trump. It's just an amazing story. These are dangerous times in almost every way. So we need to be on our knees, as we should be every day, asking God to bring real justice. And I'm not talking about the fake social justice, what's real and what's right and what's actually wrong in every situation. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.